Welcome to the only podcast for piano teachers just starting out, Piano Teacher Primer. My name is Angela Toon. Keep listening for the prime pro tips you can use with your own students right away. I am so excited to have Rachel Ehring with us today. And she's not only a podcaster, she's a double podcaster. She has her own podcast. Oh, say hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much. And she has her own podcast, the Dynamic Piano Teaching Podcast. I'm like, I remember it's a music word. Ah. And then she's hosting the Top Music Piano Podcast right now. Tell us how you got into that, and then I'll read the rest of your bio.
Sure. So I started my podcast a little less than a year ago now, last spring, the Dynamic Piano Teaching Podcast. And I was just kind of trekking along doing that. And then I ended up meeting Tim Topham at NCKP last summer. And he offered to come on to promote his book. And I was so excited that he offered to come on my podcast as a guest. And so we recorded the interview in, I think it was late October. And at the end, he said, you know, I've been wanting to take a break from my podcast and was wondering if you would want to host one for us. And I was totally shocked. Like, never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that he was going to offer that to me. So we just started talking about it. And yeah, we're a few episodes in now. We released our first one, I think it was in January. So yeah, it's pretty new, but I'm loving working with Tim and his team over there at Top Music.
That's fantastic. And you were saying they edit it for you over there.
They do.
So nice.
They're amazing.
That sounds like a dream. Well, I'll finish your bio here and then we'll get into how you started teaching. So, director of St. John's Conservatory of the Arts in Orange County, California, where she manages a private and group music lessons studio and accompanies children and adult choirs. Big choir fan over here. And she is also passionate about creative piano teaching activities and accompanying all varieties of musicians. And anything else you want to add to that?
I think that pretty much sums it up. That's what I do.
So good. That's what we do. That's so good. Tell us how you got started though. Tell us here how you got started teaching and on these journeys.
Yes. So I started teaching, as many of us did, when I was very young, probably like junior high. I had my first student and I was terrible. I didn't know what in the world I was doing. I couldn't even fill up the 30 minutes. Like, I remember the mom was like, I'm paying for 30 minutes and I want you to fill the whole time. And I was like, oh, I don't know what to do for 30 minutes. So thankfully we've come a long ways since then. So I just kind of taught off and on through high school, college, and a little bit after college. But I got, you know, a piano performance degree for my undergrad. And then I actually started doing a lot of accompanying. And so that's kind of where my career took me for many years, was accompanying. I got my graduate degrees in accompanying and worked full-time as an accompanist for a really long time. And it really wasn't until COVID that I sort of came back to teaching, and I had my son, and that kind of brought me back to, I don't know, a love for children, or maybe it developed the love for children in me, was having my own and starting to understand the power of play and the just how fun it is to hang out with these little guys. And so I started teaching a few neighborhood kids. And during COVID, we had this little play group. We'd all go to the park because, you know, you couldn't do anything else. And we probably weren't even supposed to be at the park, but we did. It was like our saving grace was we'd take the kids to the park and just let them loose for an hour or whatever. So I connected with some neighborhood moms and started teaching a few of their kids piano. And then ended up being offered the job that I have now at the conservatory, where I'm the director of this music program. And so I have about 15 teachers that work for me, and about 120 students taking mostly private lessons, a few group lessons, and then I teach a little bit. Most of my job is actually administration, but I do teach some, and I love also providing resources for my teachers. Like I'll print off games for them to use or buy, fun little things for them to use. And I love getting them excited about all the piano teaching resources that are available.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah, so you basically work all day and all evening.
Pretty much, yeah. You called me out.
No rest, no rest allowed. That's fantastic. I love that. So, was it your piano teacher when you were in middle school that was like, you should start, or did you just decide that would be a fun way to make money? Like, how did you?
I think it was a parent who approached me. So this
Yeah.
is kind of the backstory. When I was a kid, my mom was a kindergarten teacher, and so we always had to get to school early. And so I would spend that half hour or whatever before school playing the piano because there was a piano available. And so I would just sit and play the piano. And so another mom whose husband was a teacher was like, "Hey, would you want to teach my daughter during that half hour before school?" And so I said yes. And yeah. And then I think in college, it was just kind of a way to earn a little bit of extra money on the side. Yeah.
Yeah, so good. I had a couple students through college too. And I was piano performance too. So we have that in
Nice.
common.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. And that's neat that you also have your own students. How many are you teaching privately now?
I only have two private students, and then I have a group
And a
class
group.
of about six that I do.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's so nice. And then, but you're also training these teachers at the conservatory. So I love that
Yes.
you've got the pedagogy and the actual teaching and the podcasting to share it with everyone else.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm kind of a newbie to teaching because so much of my career was accompanying, although I was actually teaching, accompanying, and coaching students as an accompanist too. So there's always been teaching involved. But I think because I've come back to teaching, like, I'm excited about all the new things and the new resources and games and products and all of these things that I'm learning right along with the people that I'm introducing them to, you know?
That's so fun. Yeah, it's fresh and new for you, so you can be excited and pass it on to them.
Yeah.
That's so fantastic. I love that. And what's your group? Is it a group of young children?
Yeah,
Like
so
preschool lesson? What's your group that you do?
it's kindergarten and first graders. There's six of them, and we're using the curriculum Piano Detectives Club, which I talked about on my podcast a while back. And I love it. It's a really, really good curriculum, and it's designed for that age, kindergarten and first grade, 5 and 6 year olds, with two teachers, but you only really need one piano. We have two pianos, which is nice, but you really only need one piano. And it's a really fantastic curriculum with a lot of manipulatives and games and all sorts of fun stuff to go along with it.
That's awesome. Okay, and we'll find a link to that episode too
Okay,
to put
yeah.
in there. So I'll jot that down. That's amazing. That is so good, really. You are working hard, plus being a mom. How old's your son now?
He is 6 and a half, so he's actually in my piano class, which is an adventure.
That's perfect though, because then he can participate
Exactly.
with you. I love it so much. Okay, well, and you mentioned to me that you had some other projects too that you were doing, right?
Yes, in all my spare time.
In your spare time.
Yes. So I actually just completed creating a digital course about accompanying, and
Okay, cool.
primarily for piano teachers. I think eventually I'd like to market it to any pianist who wants to learn how to accompany. But right now my audience is mostly piano teachers, so that's kind of where I'm starting, is piano teachers who would like to improve their accompanying skills, because I believe that if you can play the piano, you can accompany. But I've heard so many piano teachers or just pianists in general say, oh, I can't accompany, or I'm not good at accompanying, or I'm scared to say yes to, different gigs that come along. So I want to take some of that fear out of accompanying and let piano teachers or pianists know that if you can play the piano, you just need a little bit more knowledge and you can be a really good accompanist. So I've created this digital course and I'm going to be launching it here in a few weeks, all about accompanying. Honestly, I probably put more in it than I should have because
Great.
it's a really big topic.
It
But
is.
I think if it's too overwhelming, teachers could just take the parts that apply to them. If teachers want to accompany choirs, they can focus on that module. Or if you're going to be playing a wedding, you can go back to that module and watch that and get some tips for that, things like that. So,
That is
yeah, that's my
such a good
kind of
idea.
latest project.
Oh, I love that. I used to accompany quite a bit more when I could do some things during the day when my little kids were around. And I think it's a wonderful outlet for us because we teach, and we're focusing on the students so much. And accompanying is a chance for me to practice, and it gets me playing things I would not otherwise pick up. And then it's also like encouraging more children in music. We've got our piano students, but to be able to help these other instrumentalists. And then I worked with a violin teacher for a little while. And just once a year, I would accompany her students for the recital and then for their Federation Festival. And it was so amazing to be in the lesson with this violin teacher. She went to Juilliard. She played for the Utah Symphony. She was incredible. It made me a better teacher because I'm there in the lesson watching her, and she is being tough on them. And she is, and I've adopted some of her isms, some of her sayings. One of my favorites was, "It's not what you play, it's how you play it."
Ah, yes.
And I say that all the time now. And that was her. And it was like her little theme of her studio. She's like, "Students, it's not what you play." And then they all say, "It's how you play it." It was really cute. So, and then, yeah, it really, it's wonderful to help the development of these kids. And like you say, you're kind of coaching them along sometimes.
Yes, for sure. And it's interesting in my job now. I'm the director of the conservatory, so a lot of kids, so I should have told you, I work at a Lutheran church that has a K-8 school attached, so most of our students are coming over from the school to take lessons, and then I accompany some of their choirs, and so I get to know the students through choir, and they know me from choir, but then they're coming for lessons, and so they know me through that, and so it just is like the perfect little mashup, I guess, of accompanying their choirs, and they come for lessons and they see me actually like doing what we're teaching them,
Yes. And I agree that accompanying is a separate skill than just playing. There definitely are some different skills, and I think it's good for people to know that you can say no if the music's too hard, and you can look at the
Yes.
music and be like, "This is going to take so much practice time. It's not going to be worth it for me."
Absolutely. Yes, I have said no to different things that, yeah, you just have to be
And I've
smart
wished
about
I'd
it.
said no once or twice
Yeah, me too.
when it was a lot harder than it looked on the surface. And then I go to
Yes.
practice it and I'm like, "What is happening?"
Yeah.
Some 20th century things. But again, it breaks me out of my bubble and I'm trying these 20th century things I wouldn't otherwise try.
Yeah, when you're an accompanist, you don't necessarily get to choose what you're gonna play, which can be good or can be hard sometimes. You might be playing, like, I have really small hands, and so there's stuff that I would never choose to play because it's like full of ninths and tenths that I can't barely reach. But, it's what I was given, so I figure out a way to make it happen.
And my final advice on accompanying, if it's an orchestra reduction, leave out notes.
Absolutely. I have a
Absolutely.
whole lesson on that in my
Who makes
course.
these transcriptions? They are impossible.
Yeah. Yes, it's if it's a reduction, it's perfectly acceptable to leave stuff out.
Yep. And my college teacher taught me that because I was stressing out about something, and he's like, you know, this is not the ori this is a reduction from a whole orchestra. It's already reduced. If you reduce it a little more, it's fine.
That's right. As pianists, as piano performers, we're so used to being tied to exactly what's on the page. But it's different when you're playing a reduction, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, accompanying is so fun. Well, that's fun. We have not talked about accompanying on this podcast, so this is perfect.
Yes.
I love it. Well, anything else, or shall we move into your top tips?
We can move into my
Piano
top tips.
teachers. Okay, so as you know, on the Piano Teacher Primer podcast, we love to support young beginning teachers and with our top three tips for beginning teachers. So take it away with number one.
All right. So my first tip is don't try to do everything. It's really easy, and I know this because I have this problem of getting shiny object syndrome. And you hear a podcast and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go do that. Oh, I'm gonna go buy that game. I'm gonna check out this resource. And before you know it, you're overwhelmed and you feel like you're a terrible teacher because you're not doing boom cards or whatever the latest thing is. So it's okay not to do everything. Choose something that is going to work for you and just go with it. Don't feel like you have to do all the things.
Any advice for how to choose that? What would you tell some of your conservatory teachers on how to decide what to implement?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of our students are young beginners. So I think focusing, and those are really the students who need the fun stuff. You know, once they get to a more intermediate level, I don't know that they need all the games and all of that. So I think just figuring out who your key students are that you want to, you know, use those resources for. And then just narrow it down to what you're attracted to, what you've found works well. You know, you might have to try a few different things to figure out what really works, but then you don't have to keep reinventing the wheel. Like you can, one thing I've learned about kids, they love doing the same thing every week. Like I have this one game and my little 5-year-old student asked to play it every single week and I'm so tired of it, but he just, that's what he wants to do. I don't have to come up with a new game every week because he wants to play the same one. And at some point, we're gonna have to try a new one. But right now, he's so happy just having his little routine of playing that game at the end of his lesson every week.
We forget that as
Yeah.
adults. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah. And I found I think that I need to do all new things and all, but as my students grow, and then I have a new batch of beginners, and then I have a new batch of beginners, I can reuse the same ones. So I used to, you know, try to come up with all new and be searching and finding a new thing for my next. But then I'm like, wait, those kids are not using that anymore. And these are all new. They haven't played it yet. So we're going to just do that same format that I did with the older ones. So you can recycle.
Totally, yes.
Brilliant. Okay, number two.
Okay, well, number two is kind of the opposite. Don't be afraid to try new things. So just go for it. Find, you know, try new activities and games and tools, and you'll start to build, like you were talking about, your arsenal of activities that you can, you know, work. And then you'll have like a little tool belt where if someone's struggling with a certain concept, you pull out that thing that you used a couple months ago. And so it is, I mean, it's fun to try new things and find new games and tools and things. So don't be afraid to try new things. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. Toss it in the trash, whatever, or try it with a different student. No worries. You know, your student is going to come back next week and you're going to do something different, and that's okay.
Absolutely. And I think new music. In my mind, I'm like, if I set my curriculum, this is the music I'm going to teach, but then I'm teaching that same stuff for hours each week, I'm going to get tired of it and I'm going to be able to correct it in my sleep. Where if it's a new piece and something new, and the student brings something that I've never seen before, and I'm like, oh, this is exciting. And my ears are perked up because I don't just know exactly the F sharp that they're gonna miss right then. It's
Yeah.
like I can have a fresh approach to
Yeah,
it.
it's fun for us as teachers and for the students.
Yeah, so this is all good reminders for me. So thank you for that. And number three, I'm super excited to hear what you're gonna say.
Yes. So number three is I have found that stories are a really great way to connect with students. I think that all of us love stories. And I used to, well, and I still do use like musical storybooks sometimes, especially with the really young ones who maybe 30 minutes was even a little bit too long. We'd read a storybook at the end that had some kind of musical theme or concept. And then, I started writing some little stories that are interactive. I call them sound effect stories. I haven't quite figured out the perfect name for them, but that's the name I'm using right now, is sound effect stories. And they're interactive. So they're short little stories and they incorporate musical activities throughout. So, like, it might be a story about a hippopotamus or whatever it is. And then, like, after the first couple of paraphs, the student will there'll be directions for the student to play a certain rhythm on the piano or find a certain note on the piano or play groups of two black notes, whatever it is. They're all like super simple for beginning students. So I actually started creating these when I first came back to teaching. I was talking about with my little neighborhood students. I thought it would just be fun. And then it took me a long time to like make them pretty and available to the public, I guess. So now I'm selling them in my Etsy store, and I only have a few right now, but I want to create more as time permits. But I would love for you to check them out, your listeners, if they're interested. They're just really fun
Great idea.
for beginners, especially.
That is a great idea. So the story is teaching the concept. Can you give us a little more example about, like, the hippopotamus, for example?
Yes, which I just pulled that out of my behind, and I actually don't have a story about a hippopotamus, I
Oh yeah,
don't think.
that's your next idea.
I know.
That's your
So my
next idea.
latest one that I did was actually, this is kind of funny. My son wanted to earn money to buy Matchbox cars. He's really into Matchbox cars. He's like, "What can I do to earn money?" And I mean, I can give him chores and whatever. But I was like, "Well, if you help me write another sound effect story, I'll share the profits with you." So he's like, "Okay." So he
Five
helped
kids,
me.
four kids.
I
Aha.
know. Yeah, so he helped me write a story about a little beagle named Frederick, because my son has a beagle. A beagle named Frederick who wakes up his family every morning by playing the piano and howling or woofing. And so throughout the story, the students have to find the different notes on the piano that he plays. And so, and then at the end, there's kind of a
Interactive.
little twist. Yeah. So, yeah, my son pretty much wrote it all. And then I just took it and, made it pretty and whatnot. So added some pictures and stuff. So.
Cute. That is so cute. And like when we're settling in as a little kid to hear a story, it like opens their minds. And
Yeah.
sometimes when, as a piano teacher, I start lecturing, here's your next concept, they're like glazed over. So I feel like this would really open their mind to learning, but then also how it has that improvisation aspect.
Yeah. Yeah, and some of them are more improv based and some of them are more activity, like play a specific rhythm or whatever. So it just depends on the story. But and even if you don't use my stories, like just using stories in lessons, just make up a little improv game where you say there was a hippo who was playing the horn. I don't know why I'm onto hippos today, but there,
I love
whatever it
hippos. I
is.
saw them in real life last year. They're so cute
Oh,
and dangerous, but cute.
yes. Yeah, but just animals are a great way to do improv, of course, and yeah.
100%. That is a fantastic idea. I
Thank
love
you.
that. Yeah, you're gonna have to ask your son about that hippo idea. He's gonna have some good
Oh
ideas.
yeah, he'll come up with a story for sure.
And then it's memorable too, I'm thinking. It'll stick in your brain, like, Sometimes you feel like you're saying the same thing over and over, but if you say it in a story form, they'll remember that story.
Yes.
Really an idea. Well, the word that is just coming to my mind is from your bio and then from what you're sharing here, and that is creativity. You are a creative person. You are creating all kinds of stuff and
Oh, thank
awesomeness
you.
in the world. And then we're helping all of these teachers and students to be more creative themselves.
Yes. Sometimes I have to kind of hone it in because I have so many creative ideas I have to like edit and check myself. But yes, I love all the creative arts of teaching
Yeah,
and playing.
shiny object. But then, yeah, following that, and that you've just made these things so available, and all of these are in the recent past. So you're amazing. Wow, 2024. You're rocking it.
Thank you.
Well, Rachel, any final thoughts?
I don't think so. We'll put all the links in the show notes for my
Yes.
course that's going to be coming out and the links to the stories. But
Yes.
thank you so much for having me on. This has been so fun to chat with you, Angela.
You, I learned a ton, and I was really happy to get some reminders for myself as well.
Well, thank you. This was so fun.
Rachel, have a wonderful week.
Thank you. You too.
Before you go, a quick note. Your dedication to piano education is keeping the music alive. If you have found value in our conversation, please leave a rating or a review and share it with a fellow piano teacher. Together, we're changing the world, one student at a time. Until next week, play on.